Blog Talk Radio.
What happens when you take a couple months off, man? You forget what song's going to come on. Welcome to it. I'm your host, Mark Elliott. We've been doing this for quite some time. You know, it's a funny thing. Throughout the course of it, I was just kind of reminiscing of some of the shows we did in the past and brought a lot of joy. I'm going to bring on two gentlemen that are the fabric of what we do here. And I want to say a little about each before I bring them on. First is Mr. D. Maurice, who happens to be related to me, and this cat has stole from me, basically. He's been in and out of my life throughout my last 57 years, and we've gotten together numerous times throughout our lives and talked about different things, shared different things, shared different topics, and grown together. And it was this idea that we put this show together, in the sense he came to me a few years ago and said he wanted me to do something in a show sense, and at the time I had no idea what to do, and I told him I didn't have anything. But shortly thereafter, some things started coming to me, and I decided to do something where men could just open up and talk. And from that, we've grown to where we've done different type of interviews, different guests have come on, and of course we cover a variety of topics. And we've always kept the same basic philosophy and stayed true to it throughout the years. It's a basic forum where we get together and share dialogue on love, relationships, and different factors of life. At times, we look for that honest self-evaluation. That's basically majority all the time. We're not afraid to look in the mirror and see who we are and talk about it. We don't shy away from things that need to be said. You know, that's what I really love about things here, because sometimes people want to basically find tact ways of saying things. I think we can still find tact a way to say things without basically shying away from what needs to be brought across. And that's what we do here. I'm going to bring in Mr. D. Maurice and see how he's doing. Sir, how are you, and how was your summer?
I have a little slight head cold, man, but that laugh really kind of cleared my head up a little bit. Can you tell the people what I stole from you? So, can we be clear what I stole?
Well, it's been so much, man, but I'll try to nail it down to one. When, when we were kids, I had a nice, big, healthy collection of Hot Wheels and Matchbox cars. So there were time to time that Mr. D. Maurice's mom would bring them over to play. And I started noticing shortly when Mr. D. Maurice would leave, some of my favorite cars would kind of tend to leave with them. So one day he came over after, I guess, you know, parking about maybe three or four times of good cars. He came over and he was leaving one day. And I said to my mother, I think he has some of my cars. So my mom related to his mother, and lo and behold, she checked his pocket. Both pockets were full with Matchbox cars. It's amazing what you can do to a child that kind of stands in the child's mind years later, man. But somehow I found my way to get over it.
No.
And we moved on to cousins.
I don't think you ever got over it. We're still talking about it to this day. You haven't gotten over that.
Yeah, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I, you know, from time to time I got to bring it up, man. I just got to bring it up. Just something that, you know, every now and then, if I'm looking for a laugh, I go back to. The other panelist that's, you know, fabric of what we do is Mr. Charles. Let me say a little about this cat here. I have yet to even meet this man in person, but when we started this show years ago, he was gracious enough to come on and be part of it. And he's been there just about every time the on-air sign has went on. And there's times, honestly, when I throw out a question and this man answers it, I stand back in awe. And I'm just going to just give a couple of ideas. I knew we were talking about his dad one time. He went on talking about his dad and kind of blew me out the way. But one of the simplest questions I threw out to Mr. Charles that I couldn't even answer. I'll be honest with you, I cannot answer this question. And I asked him, what is it that when you listen to Paul Funkadelic, the funk, what is that? What is it? What's really behind it? This cat took that question. When he got done, I was done. And I've never heard anyone explain what Parliament Funkadelic stood for other than Mr. Charles. And I've grew the Parliament Funkadelic for years, years. But if you ask me to explain what's going on behind it, other than a cartoon type of funk, I couldn't tell you. Mr. Charles, welcome to the show. How was your summer, Chief?
Excellent, man. A little busy, but it's a good thing. So we appreciate that, along with trying to stay safe.
Hey, man, that's what it's been about the entire year. I want to take time out, too, to just thank you two, man. Like I said earlier, they've been here from the beginning. Sometimes I throw off some questions, and I'm not sure where it's going to go, but they find a way to bring it and keep the core essence of what we do here at the show. I love you, too, for doing that. So I'm going to come back to you first, Mr. Charles, with our first opening question, because there's been so much going on in 2020, man. This has been a year that so much has taken place. To me, it's a way of humbling us as people, a nation, and a country. And there's a lot of things that have been happening in my mindset on that front. But just something, since we haven't been together at least about 6 days, something may have transpired in the past couple of months that got you thinking deeply, sir.
I had a couple of things, but the one thing that really hit me right away is I'm still blown away by the attention that is brought about the fight in regards to, like, not so much just Black Lives Matter, but the plight of what's going on as far as trying to bring this country together. And I say that because of the younger people, the younger generation. I know we've talked about it before, and some may think that it's more of propaganda. It's the flavor of the month. But I am really, till at this point, I'm really impressed by the way that several, even thousands of the younger generation of all backgrounds have come together to fight for what they believe in. That is astonishing and very heartwarming to me.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Mr. DeMarie, something that is, since we haven't had a chance to kind of speak much in the past couple of months, we took a chance, took a break, and kind of pulled away and had a chance to kind of enjoy the summer a bit. Something that transpired that had you thinking deeply.
I agree with Mr. Charles about Black Lives Matter and all the things that have been coming with that, with the protests and how people are very, in tune and passionate about what's going on and wanting to make some change. However, I can't help but feel a little cynical about some of the efforts that have been made by, especially I've been watching the NFL today and the NBA, just being a little cynical about, hoping that this is civil rights and human rights is not trendy or trending right now. And it seems like when people are given permission to wear a shirt or put something on their sneakers, that they're willing to do it. But when it was time to make a sacrifice, it was the price was too high to pay to make a sacrifice 4 years ago. So pardon me for being a little cynical about that, but that's what I kind of noticed with in the last few months when, you know, we have COVID and we have the protests about police brutality, that in some ways I don't think everybody is as passionate or as forthright in moving forward with this movement. So I've been a little cynical about it. Just watching people, not really kind of calling out people anymore. But if you notice, some of the same people who were downing this particular idea 4 years ago, just seem to be all in now. So that's where my cynicism comes in.
We're going to stay there for a minute. Stay right there, because this is what I find interesting. And it's, I agree with you with that, because, you know, we spoke at length how 4 or 5 years ago some folks were afraid to say Colin Kaepernick's name, more or less basically speak about what was really going on, why was he kneeling. And as you see now, based on some things that have happened, you know, a lot of them now have come to, and it's more or less, say, acceptable now to step out and say some things, put on a T-shirt, and do such. But my question, I'm going to come to you, back to you, Mr. DeMaurice, with this one, is that, you know, I as well see some things from folks that basically a while ago, you know, just weren't there. Now, you know, I understand the cynical, being cynical, but is it time, or maybe we should think about forgiving those that couldn't understand it and see it back then, but are willing now to basically come and be part of it and do what's right for the good of the girl? That's the question I'll come to you first for, Mr. DeMaurice.
Well, I guess the way I look at it is that I want to know people's true intentions with it. Because if you don't know people's true intentions and you kind of fall in to what they're saying and what they claim they're going to do and they don't do it, you just, to me, you just get hurt all over again, or that, you know, it kind of takes, you know, some steps backwards in that. So I'm just really kind of, I'm really not trying to call individual people out that I know who weren't with this 4 years ago, but are with it now. I'm just sitting back and watching and watching what they do to see whether or not they are very honest about and sincere about what they are saying and how they're getting on TV and radio broadcasts and really kind of expressing their feelings about, you know, what they know now and what they want to do and how they want to use the platform. I'm just sitting back waiting, because it's going to be hard for me to trust, because I want that same energy from 4 years ago when they were speaking out against it right now. And, you know, when people are talking out of both sides of their neck, then it's hard for me to kind of trust them automatically. So, yeah, that's how I feel about it. I'll watch you and I'll watch what you do. But to trust you right away, nah, I can't do that right now.
Mr. Charles, is it time to start to forgive some that basically didn't come when they should have came years ago, but they find themselves trying to sit at the front of the table now?
I would say yes. I don't have a problem with forgiving people, but I'm with Mr. DeMaurice. It's time for action. It's time for it to come with solutions. It's time to show, take action and come up with plans, long-term plans or something that we can see some tangible results. Because you can say anything. Again, we talk about that flavor of the month, talk about this later, but Hands Across America, hunger, it's always something, and everybody jumps on it. We do well for about a good year or two, and then everything disappears. You know that. Let's be real. So I'm with him, but we need to see some solid results. And I also think that I hope that the younger people that have been instrumental in making progress and change stick with it and continue to show us old heads. I can say that now. I'm older now. Us old heads, how it should be done.
I'm going to go back to the question I gave you, too, earlier, something that I've been thinking that's touched me and thinking about deeply. Some folks that don't necessarily look at like us recently have came out and said some strong things. I'm taking a strong stance, and I want to bring one to our attention. I want us to talk about a little bit, because I thought this was very strong. Country singer Chris Stapleton the other day spoke profoundly on CBS This Morning. He called it a broad awakening. Those were his words. He said, I thought I lived in a different country. I felt like this country I've been living in is a myth. And we have a lot of work to do as individuals and as society. Americans should be working hard to stamp out racism. Now, he caught a lot of flack from some of his country listeners and people that support him, in a sense. The first thing they ran and kind of kind of chastised him about was about speaking out against the police. And, then, you know, they're trying to hide the fact they don't want to talk about racism. But I like the line where he says this country being a myth. Because when you think about America in general, it's built, it's founded, and it basically always sells you the myth. And I would have to just think, a lot of us never bought into it. But think about those for a second that was raised buying the myth that this country is better than anywhere else. This country takes care of its own. This country doesn't have a problem with this. And they look at the flag and they believe that it's real. And they don't understand the real true heritage of the country they live in. So when I hear him say something like that, it's to me that he had awakening. And that has to be hard. Just imagine you knowing something or being taught something your entire life, and they come to find out it's not real. It's just not real. You don't find out as a young kid where you can adjust. You find this as a young man. I'm sorry, as a grown man. You have to come to terms with it. And I think, truthfully, there's a lot of Americans sitting around feeling the exact same way he's feeling it. They may not come out and say it, but in their hearts, if their heart is open and real, they have to understand this and feel this. So I want to spend a little time first, you know, giving him some, you know, attention that it takes a real man to stand up and say something and not worry about the backlash that's going to come from it. Because as you know, and as we spoke numerous times, there's gentlemen that look like us that are afraid to open up and say what needs to be said. And he crossed the line, in my opinion, and said what he said. So I'm going to give him my thank you and my attention. But at the same time, I want to speak about the myth, because that's what this country is afraid to really understand and deal with. Because America has been sold and telling people a bunch of lies for years. And it's hard to go back and realize you've been basically bamboozled from the same people that you trust and love and thought that was in your favor in your corner. They've been lying to you, deceiving you. So, Mr. Charles, I'll come to you first. Now, I sent this information to you, Mr. DeMaurice, so I wanted to get your opinion on just the mere fact of a country singer. Just think about a country singer in general, where there's a kind of a thing in country music in a sense where they take that Confederate flag to be their own. And the funny thing about it, majority don't even know what it stands for. They just don't. They've seen it so much to believe, to think that they think what it represents, but a lot of when they come across realize it represents, they have no clue. But with that being said, just speak on the mere fact of him speaking out and saying such and talking about the myth. What he thought America stood for and what it was really about is not the truth at all.
Is it, yeah. Mr. Charles? Or, okay. All right.
I don't know. I'll go first. Don't worry about it, bro. I appreciate it. I think I heard my name first. We'll go.
Yeah.
He can't wait to get in. That's what it is. He's chopping at the bit.
That's my problem. I can't wait to get in. There you go. Anyway, the myth, I think about that, and I think how the premise of people from different backgrounds want to get along. And I think about African Americans. Mr. DeMaurice's book speaks about that so much, about having to wear a mask to get along in the corporate world. But despite all of that, I think that this country singer, along with many others, experienced something so crazy and something that was just so unbelievable that it made him take a step back and shake his head. And what I'm referring to is the 8 minutes and so many seconds of watching a man die on video. And when you look at that, I think that affected so many different people. And you can say what you want to, oh, they don't do that, the police, whatever, and I don't want to take this into a long soliloquy, but when you watch that literally and you watch it again or you just catch a glimpse of it and you just think about what it took and what happened, you say to yourself, my God, when I started watching this, a man was alive. And when I stopped, seeing inside of you as a human being, or throw the color out or whatever it may have, the charge may have been, you watched a person die. And I think that alone affected so many different people. And you can say that really didn't happen, but when it's right there for you and other people are saying the same thing, they look just like you, you might want to come to grips with the reality.
I think it did shook the world, not only America. It shook the world to basically witness. And I think what it did when it shook the world and kind of woke the world up, you had to go back to all the times with others when people were basically, not people, when people were saying, this exists, this goes on. It may not happen in your neighborhood. It may not be happening to your sons or your daughters, but it's happening. And I think those minutes when they watched it and couldn't turn away, it brought all those back to the forefront of their mind, and they had to deal with it. And they no longer, some ran away and tried to justify it, because let's face it, some humans will never deal and face with the truth. They just won't. They'll find other things to look at and try to run away from it. But for those that wanted to and were brave enough and wanted to deal with the truth head on, you had to start to look and understand what's been going on with America. You had to start to understand and realize this has been going on for a long period of time, because it wasn't at your front door or your backyard. You chose to maybe not pay attention. Dee Marie, The Myth of America, spoke up the words with Chris Stapleton, your response, sir. I knew you were fighting to get in, man, so this is all you, cuz. Go ahead.
Yeah, I commend what he said and the statement he's making and the stance he's making. But let's be honest. America has been seeing people of color, especially black men, being lynched, hunted, shot for years. This has been happening for years. It just didn't happen in the last 4 years. And so I think we're coming to a time where there are a lot of things happening in this country that people can't ignore it anymore. You have this virus where people had to stay home. They couldn't go out and about and just forget about what they had seen or what's going on in the world. The spotlight is on the United States. The clown in the White House is putting the spotlight on the United States. And so a lot of people are coming to the realization that these myths that the United States has, and especially this clown who highlights the myths of the United States being the greatest country in the world and all this other stuff, has come to the realization that, you know what, maybe this is not so. Some of them, not all of them. So I really commend folks who aren't of color, who really come out and really speak on this. And my thing is now is that let's put that nice speech into action. What are you going to do? How are you going to use your platform? How are you going to educate people about how you feel? Because I understand he's taking a lot of backlash on this. How are you going to deal with that? Because a lot of people have taken backlashes on a particular stance and lost revenue, lost their jobs, lost their way of making money. So when things get tight, I'm just going to sit back and wait. Just when things get tight, when he starts to lose that, will he change his stance a little bit? Because, you know, we're used to being in tight situations of people of color, of going against the grain, things of that sort. But when things get tight with folks who have been in privilege, let's see if you take a different stand. And the thing is that when I think about that, I think about Baker Mayfield, who said something, you know, a few weeks ago, then in the last 2 days said, you know what, I'm going to do something else right now. When shit gets tight, let's see when folks kind of change their stance, or if people who are endorsing you or companies that are endorsing you saying, you know what, we don't believe in this, we're going to let you go if you don't change your stance. Let's see if, you know, you're still coming with that same energy. Because we all heard this before from other people. And so, I agree, he made a stance, he went against the grain, against an audience that some of them don't want to look at the realities of life and take it seriously. But when things start getting tight, I want to see if he still has that same energy in the statement that he made.
I want to bring up another person, in my opinion, that took a different stance recently, this past week or so. And, you know, we talk about Chris Stapleton, his point. Let's talk about Dak Prescott of the Dallas Cowboys, the quarterback that leads the Dallas Cowboys. He came out about a week ago, and he said that the anthem protests, I'm going to say that again, the anthem protests should be an individual choice. Yeah. Should somebody tell Dak Prescott that we're not protesting the anthem? I'm just wondering. And I, when I read this, I said to myself, this sounds like a ventriloquist to me. It sounds like something Jerry Jones and his son gave him to say, and they stuck his hand up his back, and they was moving his mouth to censure a reporter to get it out there. Because I, you know, I know it's possible. I'm sure it's possible. But I'm saying to myself, there's no way 5 years later, there's no way, what has transpired in the past 5 years or what's transpired in the past 5 months as a black man in this country, you can't be dumb enough to believe the protest is about the anthem. I just find it hard to believe. So, and I hear what you're saying, Mr. DeMaurice, about Charles, I mean, Mr. Stapleton, it might get tough and he might do some things. And I get that totally. But if we're going to talk about him and what may come to him, we have to spend some time talking about our own. When you have a platform that this young man has, and he still is combobulating his mind, thinking that we're protesting the anthem, what gives? What gives? So I'll come to you first, Mr. DeMaurice, and let's address that. Because how, in his head, it's ironic because he came out shortly after, and said that he's dealt with some problems. His brother, about a month or 2 months ago, took his life. And he came out and said throughout the summer he's dealt with depression and anxiety based on that, and the COVID that was going on. And I'm not one to want to try to diminish that or say anything about that. But I will say the timing in saying that after you said the anthem thing to me, I felt was a little peculiar. I just felt that was a little peculiar to come out with that shortly thereafter. Because to me, I would have thought you would have said that before you said the anthem thing, didn't even talk about the anthem. But I just seen how the anthem got the focus. And to kind of get away from that statement, let me come out and say I've been dealing with this. And when he came out and said about his mental state, he got a lot of protection, bro. Everybody ran in and put their arms around him and don't talk about Skip Bayless said some things. And they were ready to basically, you know, rip Skip Bayless' head off. Now, you can say what you want about Skip Bayless, whatever you want to do, what you want to say about him. And I've never been a big fan of his, but I became more of a fan when he hired Shannon Sharpe and gave Shannon Sharpe a platform to say whatever he wanted to say and speak when idiots like Dak Prescott say these dumbass things. So my point is, you know, sometimes we got to clean our own house first. So I want to speak to what he's saying because here again, I find it just here. I can't get the words out strong enough. How? Even servants of Charles Trouble, World War I, and George Floyd. What was the anthem based on a knee being on someone else's neck for that period of time? What does that got to do with the anthem? I'll come to you first, Mr. DeMaurice.
So Dak is trying to get a contract, and he's trying to stay on the Dallas plantation. So anything that Jerry wants, he's going to try to stay on Mr. Jerry's plantation. That's what that's all about. He's trying to save his chicken. He's trying to save his corn. That's, in my opinion, that's what he's trying to do. So he's trying to say anything that the Dallas faithful want to hear, ticket holders want to hear, he's trying to do that. The other thing is that he don't want to understand. That will force him to make some conscious decisions on his life. He doesn't want to understand. And a lot of people are like him. They see it. They will try to mix up the message. They don't want to understand. So what we have to do, instead of you call them our own, I don't call them that. We got to leave some folks behind. This train is moving. It's going forward. And I don't want to spend any more time trying to explain to folks that this is about police brutality instead of the anthem. Matter of fact, those folks, this is my last time saying it, look at all the lyrics of the anthem. Look at all the lyrics of the anthem and ask yourself, as black people, does that anthem speak for me? So there are folks who don't want to understand. And if they're trying this hard not to understand, then I'm not going to try very hard to try to get them to understand something that they don't want to see. They don't want to see reality. So for those like Dak Prescott and other folks who still are coming up with this same argument, this old argument that doesn't hold water, I don't pay attention to it anymore. It's moving forward. What you think doesn't matter anymore. But you will gain some of the benefits of some of the work that we're doing. And until you get pulled over by the police who don't care if you're Dak Prescott and you get caught driving while black and they don't care, no, you're not going to get it. So I don't look at folks like that saying, hey, we need to corral them and try to sit them down in the chair and try to make them understand what we're going through. They don't want to understand. So as grandmother used to say, let them sleep. Let them sleep there. If that's where they want to stay, let them sleep there. But we can't spend any more time trying to convince folks who don't want to be saved or don't want to understand the realities of the situation. We don't have any more time to be spending with those folks trying to help them see stuff. If they don't see it at this particular point, it's simple. They don't want to see it.
Well, Black Men Talk, this is what we do. This is what we do. Mr. Charles, your reaction, sir?
Yeah, to a point, I agree with what Mr. DeMaurice is saying. I think we end up, as particularly men, African-American men, that have a certain belief and have struggled, we think sometimes that everybody should be on the same page. And we think that because people are in positions like Dak Prescott, that they're automatically going to push the envelope towards letting the real world see what we're all about. And oftentimes that's not the case. It just does not happen. And because people have titles, because people make a lot of money, because people play football and they make a lot of money, then we feel like, oh, my God, you have to stand up and you're supposed to be this beacon of light for us and share our message. In a perfect world, yes. Yes, I would love to have that, but I'm with DeMaurice. And we all know that we're from around the way, and we'll explain that term for individuals that don't understand it a little later. But when we mean you're around the way, you've seen things, you've been through things, you know the things that your family and our people have struggled through. So when you have opportunity and you can, you speak out about it. But the whole point of it is, I agree with that 100%, leave them behind. There's no time to be trying to figure out, trying to get somebody to do something the right way. It's amazing how we have people out here still that have platforms where they stand even there against what we believe. And then they get left down the street and not allowed to speak at certain conventions. Anyway, I ain't saying your name. I'm just saying, they just left out the cold. But then you want to come on back to the Black Baptist Church. Are you kidding me? So with all that being said, I'm with Mr. DeMaurice. I agree with him from that standpoint. But I also will say this, that we've known for quite some time, but we don't want to acknowledge it often. Maybe because it hurts too much or we don't think it's right. Certain people just are about themselves, and it's about money. It's about the money. And we wish they were different. We wish they were better. But they're showing us who they are. They're showing you who they are. They're showing us who they are. So why are we wasting that time? If that's who you want to be, I mean, I'm not going to go to the other part of another one. It'll take a long argument another day. But certain individuals have shown us who they are. And that's it. And we need to leave it right there. Delete them.
Black Men Talk. This is what we do, ladies and gentlemen. We get together, three cats basically, Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles, Mark Elliott, myself. And we spend time just basically with dialogue, pure, open dialogue, not shy away from things that need to be said. Usually it's around love, different facts of life, different factors of life, I'd say, and some other things too. But we find a way to kind of take something and bring our conversation to it, and we're not afraid to, and I appreciate us doing that. John, I'm going to go back a little bit to the year of 1912. That's not even a little bit. That's way back. That's when the Progressive Party was started. It was a third party started outside of Democrat or Republican to basically run for president in this country. Back in 1952 in the Progressive Party, there was a newspaper owner in Los Angeles named Charlotta Bass, the sister. And just think about that for a second. 1952 in Los Angeles, owning her own newspaper. You probably say, well, you know, that's enough. She held her own newspaper. You know, she, that's back in those days, you think about in Los Angeles, the accomplishment of itself is enough. But nah, she didn't stop there. She was nominated to become vice president of the United States of America, becoming the first African-American woman to be nominated. And before she was nominated to the Progressive Party, she was a Republican. So we know what's taking place recently. And Kamala B. Harris is being nominated. Who's been nominated is going to run with Joe Biden. And it's interesting when that happened, there was a storm of sorts that kind of took place among our people, which is kind of interesting. And a lot of people took a stand, good or bad or whatever. And like you two have just basically said, you know, some people, we don't have time to kind of really educate and bring them on. And we're going to leave them at the bus stop. We're going to keep moving. But I just thought it was interesting. And it kind of made me think we should spend some time talking about this. I like what Dia Hughley said about this. He spoke and said, don't be so woke to tear down a black woman. Don't be so woke to think that tearing down a black woman is more important than reelecting a racist, sexist idiot. And I think sometimes when we, you know, I say we just as people in general, when things come along, we think narrowly. We don't think broad, wide enough, and we just kind of find something in a narrow scope, and we just zoom in, and we stay there, and we don't see the whole picture. And with that being said, I think a lot of people that basically came out against her and was mad with what she did as a prosecutor, whatever the case may be, I would say this in general as a prosecutor, you have to understand of a job of a prosecutor. A prosecutor cannot stand in court and watch certain people come to the door and go, I want to excuse myself because I don't want to be the prosecutor that prosecutes this person. And I would understand if it's a family member, it's your son, it's your daughter, your mama, your father, I understand. But when you make it to that level, you have a job to do no matter who walks through the door. So I found the argument of what they were saying about her, what she did, to be very interesting and narrow-minded. But to me, underlying all that, and I'm coming to you first with this, Mr. Charles, I think underneath all that, that's kind of maybe didn't really come to the forefront or didn't get talked about, is that we carry a special hate for each other, special, that's made and it's kind of put together, cooked well, and it's just whenever it comes out, it got that specialness to it. And for whatever reason, when she got nominated and was moved on to become potentially the vice president of this country, and I think she's going to be president before long, we pulled out that old ingredient that we had stuck in the closet, that special hate. So I wanted to get your perception. I think the special hate is basically true. I'll give you the question first. Do we care a special hate for ourselves than we care for any other race? And then your reaction to what kind of took place with us as people hearing that she was being elected or being nominated to be vice president or asked to be vice president of a country we lived in for the past how many years?
In regards to the hate with us, I think it depends on the individual, because I don't know. I know some people those people that would be included in that, but everybody, in my opinion, what I've dealt with, people I've dealt with, it's not just a regular thing like, I hate you because of this, or I hate you because of that, or I hate her because of that. I think it depends on the individual. But we are quick. Some of us have been known to quick to criticize. It's kind of like, what can we find what's wrong with this person to say why we don't like them? But the whole point of it with the hate thing is, I think it depends on the individual, and I think it's around who you surround your people, who you surround yourself with. I'm trying now to remove negativity, a lot of negativity. So when I see it, if I know that's how that person is, I kind of step off. I may not be engaging in a lot of activity with that person. So I would say I think that the hate amongst us, as you mentioned, is more individualized. People come together, of course, is stronger. And in regards to the hate around how people reacted to Ms. Harris, again, there's jealousy. I think that some of us didn't think that was the right way to go because of what had happened. As you mentioned, she was a prosecutor. That's her job. But then again, when you put something out in the atmosphere, people are going to come for you. She's been known to call herself the top cop. And you're saying top cop, and if it's 90% of African-American men you're taking down, you're going to have a problem. Right or wrong, you're going to have a problem. But I think overall, last but not least, the point here is going to be that, and I think D.L. Hughley put it out there, 13% of African-American males voted for Trump. So the question is, like it was the last time or before that when Obama ran, it's going to be for many people, particularly us, what we consider which one is the lesser of two evils. I know that's, I'm going to catch hell for that, but I'm just going to keep it real with you.
You know, I'll say this, man. I mean, first time I heard of about the 13% that voted for a black male that voted for Trump. And honestly, if you find a reason to vote for him, then that's your choice. I am not mad at you. You find a reason to vote for anyone, that's your choice. I'm not mad. But if you find a reason to vote for him in spite of somebody else, or in spite of what she thinks she might have done, then I think that's an idiot choice. This is my personal opinion. As an American, you have a right to vote for whoever you choose for that serves you or you feel will serve the best interest of what you believe in. So I could never be mad at anyone to take their vote and just basically use it on that accord. But I think for us, in a sense, you know, there's only so many of us, let's be real. And when you use your vote to spite, I think it's a dumbass thing to do. It's just my opinion. Because only person that's really getting any joy out of that is you when you walk away from the voting booth. But the next 4 years, spite may kick you in the ass. So your enjoyment may just be short-lived. So if you're cool with that, be cool. And you can vote for who you want. You really can. But I just, you know, I guess I grew up thinking that, I remember when I was younger, you heard the word black power a lot. And it wasn't in a negative sense. It was more so in a unity sense. And I don't mean if you get behind black power just to be because it's black, but you got behind black power because we were preyed upon and we wanted to feel good about ourselves. So when I look at her, and I read about her, I realize where she's come from, where she's worked. Yeah, she may have said some things that may not, you know, been pleasing, whatever. But, you know, she looks like me. I know her entire life couldn't have been basically walking around a silver spoon as much as we want to think so. But she had a right to live and choose what she wanted to do, and this is what she chose to do. So I try to be more understanding as opposed to maybe looking at one thing she said or one thing she did and just totally discount her, because a lot of us have kind of fall short. But here again, if you're making a decision not to vote for her, or a ticket that she's on because of something she done years ago, to me, that's spite. And if you're going to vote for him based on that, it's just spite. And we spend a lot of time living our lives based on spite. And spite gets you nothing in life. It just doesn't. Mr. DeMaurice, I want to get you on this in a sense of Camilla D. Harris, what was kind of going on in a sense. And I spoke of the thing of D.L. Hughley. And we all take different perception. I mean, different points of different perception, but I wanted to get your reaction, sir.
I agree with most of what you all said. The interesting thing is that back in the 2016 election, 46 million folks decided not to vote. And it was like a protest against Hillary Clinton. Like they were hurting Hillary Clinton by not voting, and Donald Trump got in. How is that working for us? That's one question, rhetorical question. The other thing is that I remember, I was telling somebody this the other day, when it comes to politics, I remember what Eddie Murphy said on the Arsenio Hall show a long time ago about the philosophy of the smallest feet. And basically said, you're going to get kicked in the ass, whoever you vote for. So select the candidate that has smaller feet, so at least it won't hurt as much as the one that has a bigger feet. And that's where we are right now. But talking about Camilla Harris, I know there are some things about how she's a prosecutor and some of the things in her past. I remember when he first announced it, I was like, you know what? I don't think this is a good move because he just made himself harder to get this guy out of office, this other guy out of office. Then I started really kind of looking at it and reading and thinking about why would they make this move. And as I started gaining more information about why they made this move, it made a lot of sense. It made a lot of sense because I thought he was going to choose Elizabeth Warren or Rice. But, you know, looking at them and looking at her and what she was able to do and how she kind of rolls with things, I'm like, okay, I get why they're choosing her. And part of the reason is because I think she is very likable in different populations that, you know, we're not a part of. And so that she could carry this, and she's held her own since she was selected. But man, nobody hates more than family, bro. I mean, it took me a long time to figure that out, but nobody hates like family hates. And so we, as a black family, we tend to hate, you know, our reflection of ourselves, seeing ourselves in other people, and then we hate a little bit more than everybody else. It's almost like, I don't know if you two have ever experienced this. You'll go into a black McDonald's, and there's a white counterpart going there, and the person behind the counter says, "Welcome to McDonald's. Can I help you, please?" And then when they get to you, they go, "What you want?" Like you don't matter. Like you don't matter. So we hate on each other so much. I don't even think we realize it. That we treat each other so badly, because I think what we feel inside sometimes, and I was not saying everybody does that, but what we feel about ourselves sometimes and about our race sometimes, I think we take it out on folks that look like us, you know, just because. So no matter how high we get up, decisions we made, things we did, we're going to have something negative to say about that particular person. And it's just, I think it's another symptom of being oppressed. Learning to hate yourself, you will hate not only yourself, but other people that look like you.
Yeah, we were taught well. We were taught well. When you say learning to hate yourself, we were taught well. And it's interesting how that has been passed down, and it continues to just roll like a big ball. And that's another part of it. If you hate yourself, how do you have someone else and love someone that kind of look like you? Especially if you think in your heart, in your mind, that person has achieved success that you haven't. That's more reason to hate that person. But I want to touch base on something that you said, Ms. Dewey. I think, too, when he first picked her, it was another sister in Congress. I can't think of her name. I read about, I thought it might have been a better choice. But I started thinking and putting stuff together, and I think she's a very good choice for him. And I think there's a lot of people of the 46 million that you said that didn't vote will support her, will stand behind her. And I like the fact that watching her prior to her getting picked, she was different. And it seemed like, I don't know if they talked to her, they spent some time talking to her before they kind of made her the choice. And she's kind of humbled herself. She's come across different now. She is more warmer. She's more likable. That's what's needed. And there's sometimes when you're trying to get something done, you just got to get it done. You just got to get it done. I remember a cat told me a long time in business, sometimes they don't care how you get it done. They just want it done. You just go get it done. And that's what we're up against now. If the Democrats really want them out of office, you got to get it done. You don't have time to basically squabble over this and that. Well, this one said this a while ago. And it's amazing, I find, there's some cats that came out. There's some people in the black community, but some now look at them as being leaders. Ice Cube came out and said something a while ago. You know, they came and talked to me. Ice Cube, get the fuck out of here. Bro, seriously. I'm happy for your success in your career. I don't want to hear you say anything about the upcoming election. Because realistically, you never come out and say anything any other time. You never came anything out and said anything else that goes on in black America, you keep your mouth shut. You go make your movies. Every now and then, I don't know if you make a song or not, whatever the case may be. But you never speak up. But you act like you're the power to be now. Go somewhere and sit down. So realistically, choose a side. Choose a side. But here again, if you're choosing your side on spite, good luck. And that's what a lot of, not only we did, that's what a lot of that 46 million that chose not to vote, they thought they were spiting. In a sense, you have what you have for the past 3.5 years. You really have it. So, you know, you can sit back and complain about whatever he's done, do this right, whatever. But if you chose not to go to the poll 4 years ago, you should pat yourself on the back. You really should. You should pat yourself on the back because you did one good job. You did a bang-em-up job, and I'm proud of you. I'm very proud of you. Gentlemen, let's take a little break. When we come back, we will get Mr. DeMaurice to give us a topic, a question to kind of feel and get an idea of what's going on. It's when Black Men Talk. Mr. DeMaurice, Mark Elliott, Mr. Charles.
Entanglement, entanglement, entanglement. I got to bring this up because we were away for the summer and this word entanglement, and you know where I'm going with this. You know, Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith, which I think was the dumbest thing to do to try to explain what happened with the infidelity in their own marriage and their private life, and they just made a bigger mess of things. So I wanted to see what you two thought about that. Entanglement.
Mr. Charles, you want to go first, or you want me to kind of roll with it, sir? Your choice.
You go ahead. You sound like you're ready, sir, so I'm going to defer. I'm defer to Coin Talk.
Oh, I'm just going to say this. I don't know what happened in the last 10 to 20 years where privacy means nothing anymore. It just doesn't mean anything. And I'll start there first. Realistically, I just don't care. I mean, I just don't care. I don't care what Will Smith and Jada Pinkett does. I don't care. But I will say this. I think there's something that this is stupid for another man to come to and ask you to be with your wife. And you give him your blessings? So whatever that is, whatever you want to call it, I know we live in the 20s or the case may be, it's just, to me, you're making a mockery of marriage. Why do it? Why be in it? Because you're making a mockery of it. And who am I to say there's a price to pay for that or whatever, but you're making a mockery. But so many people oversell in this country. they oversell. They want you to believe, and they sell you something that's not what it really is. So they've been overselling to me for a long time because they don't, to me, know how to raise their kids. They don't know what they're doing. So was I surprised at that? Not the least. It's a joke. To me, they're a joke. They really are. I think their marriage is basically cover some things as they oversell it. But at the end of the day, if I never heard her name or his name again, I would continue to have a smile on my face. And I think as a nation, as society, I don't know if it's social media or whatever it is, we spend too much time focusing on what celebrities are doing. Personally, I don't give a shit. We spend too much time. I'm sorry. I think if you spent half the time paying attention to what they're doing, you have yourself a life. You'd have yourself a life. But we are so ingrained in what they're doing and who's doing what and do whatever. And that's just my stance on it. Your reaction, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, I don't even know where to start on this. I'm serious. What I find bizarre to me is they want to have some kind of feeling about what other people are saying about them. When you put it out there for the whole world to see and the whole world to deal with and comment on, I guess that's the price of fame that you pay. Well, how can you act some kind of way or be mad at somebody that tweeted something or whatever? Maybe that keeps you in the spotlight. But when you put your business out there, I've never been one for that. I've never been one to put my business out about my relationships. And maybe if I made a lot of money and paid me a lot of money, I might consider it. But I doubt it. But it's just, as you mentioned, how do you stay together and everything's out there? And as you mentioned, I can't comprehend if I was married, another man coming to me and saying, hey, if you don't mind, I don't care how open my damn relationship is, regardless, that's my wife. Call me old school, old fashioned, whatever you want to, but I don't get the whole. I don't understand the background of what you're doing. Why they're together still, and they have a different way. So I'm not going to judge them. The really scary thing about this to me is with all of the red table talk, whatever she has, people are buying into this as if she's a person that can deliver answers to their lives, and they're listening to, like, she's a counselor or something. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Her life is, and their lives are so filled with so much stuff, so much craziness. I might watch it for entertainment, but there's no way in hell I'm going to be looking at them for answers because they can't get out of their own way.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. They're tuning in. It almost reminds me when it's not the same, but it kind of reminds me when Steve Harvey came out with the book. They married two times. I think the second wife left for his other wife, whatever case, whatever. I can't remember all the salacious details. But the man wrote a book. Think Like a Man, Act Like a Woman. And you know what happened with that book, right? You don't even have to say. But before I come to you, Mr. Beecher, I just want to just say this, and I'm sorry if I'm eating your time, bro. But I can speak for myself, and I speak for most men. Most men don't want to be a woman thinking like a man. You just don't. The premise right there is all wrong. It's wrong. I mean, what man wants to be with a woman that's thinking like a man? So how are you going to think like a man, act like a woman? But here again, if someone tells you, I can get you what you want, and what they want is they want that brother. So someone tells you, and when Mr. Charles says she's out there saying this, I would believe there's plenty of married women that want to stay married, but they want to basically sleep with someone else. She's opening the door for them basically say, yeah, you can do this too. Because there's plenty of women that look at celebrities and want to live their lives anyway. So you're right, because a lot of us are weak and followers. And it's just very interesting. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
To me, it's just a sign of the times, man, because I think we had a conversation about this offline, how, you know, there are many men in the adult film industry who sanction this, you know. So I guess when you get to a certain status, when, you know, regular things get boring to you, you kind of venture on to all of this. And then, but the consequences of that, I think they're feeling right now. Because, you know, if you're two consenting adults, you want to do what you want to do, that's all right with me. But realize that there are some consequences that come with that. And I think when they just came out and tried to do a show to kind of explain their way, it just made them look worse. It just made them look like anything they were trying to build up to be credible, they just lost their credibility at that particular point.
It says something to me, man. I don't know if you're saying it in code. And I'm not going to speak in code, bro. When you said many men in Hollywood celebrity, bro, most of these men are gay. Hmm. And I don't know if you're trying to say that in code, but that's what's really underneath all this. A lot of them are gay, bro, or bisexual. And that's been the top secret that's been going on with a lot of celebrities and a lot of artists. And that's where a lot of this BS trends from, and that's what it is. So if you're not basically wanting to be with your woman, you have no problem with another man being with your woman, bro. If you're looking at him instead of looking at her, you don't care if another man is with your woman. So realistically, a lot of these cats, they're marrying to have these women beside their side to hide the fact that they're gay. They didn't want to be a woman in the first place. But then when they want to walk out in public, when they want to walk on that red carpet, they want you to believe and us to believe that they're not. But that's what I see. And I call a spade when I'm playing a game. I don't even play games much with card games. But a spade is a spade. Because realistically, that's it. And there's a bunch of them. I can name names who I believe is, but that's your life. But it's more profound in that world, and we want to understand and believe. It's more profound in our community. They want to understand and believe. But that's really what's behind it. A lot of it, in a sense. There it is. Let's take a little short break. When we come back, we'll have a question come from Mr. Charles. That's when Black Men Talk. Mr. DeMaurice, Mark Elliott, Mr. Charles.
COVID-19, the virus, as some people call it, the age or the year of the mask. So the question is, where do you fall on which side? Do you think it's necessary to wear a mask? You think it's a bunch of hooey? People just need to not buy into the hype? Even though the fact is that people are dying, where do you stand?
Ooh, I'll go first, Mr. DeMaurice. You know, it's interesting. I'm kind of mixed on this because my first reaction to this was it's kind of similar to the flu in a sense. And I think that to a degree, there's many people that die from certain things in this country every single year. They don't get the attention that the COVID was given. And I think reality was this is the first time we've had something in our backyard that we couldn't really control. It was out there, and it took us by storm. And it forever changed the way we're going to live, do business, and work in this country. So you had to really respect it in that sense. So to wear a mask, I would say, yes. My question I have and my thought process I have, if you're telling me, like here in the state of Connecticut, they did the quarantine where everyone had to be down for whatever. I couldn't quarantine. My job wouldn't allow me to quarantine. I had to go to work, everybody to do. My life had to continue on. So to me, if you're telling me now it's stable, it's under 1%, and everything is good, why are we still wearing masks? Because at what point do the fear and all that basically walk away? And then you look at this guy, Fauci, whatever. Oh, this fall is going to be. Don't make statements that you can't stand behind. Because I can make those statements too. So it's like, if you're telling me it's coming back and forth, you got to give me a little bit of, give me a little something to kind of support anything you say. So I think some of it, to an extent, is overblown. There is some realness to it. But I said this on this show, and I'll say it again. You know, I look at the medical world, for instance, and I've seen different articles where they said some of the numbers have been overblown. They said some of the people that basically have been shown to be positive weren't really positive. You can go back and forth, so we all have our opinions. But I just think that something came along, and, you know, there's something virus that comes in our country every single year. But this had a greater impact because it really took out. I saw a statement or statistic the other day. The majority of people that died from it were elderly folks with other problems or other issues. I'm not to say it hasn't affected younger people. And some of the young people affect, they have had issues, health issues. If anything from this, man, I think it showed us as a nation, as people, we need to get a little more healthier. You need to spend more time at building your immune system up. And I'm not saying that would have kept you safe, whatever, but I just think that should be your mindset, because at some point you got to take the mask off. You just have to. Unless you're going to live the mask the rest of your life, you have to take it off. My response, your response, Mr. DeMers.
Well, I take it seriously, and I've seen the devastating effect it had here in Chicago and communities of Chicago. Now it's spreading downstate, and this is something that we've never seen before. I do not think it's just the flu. I think it's the masks are necessary because this is an airborne virus. And so it travels through the air from person to person. And I think if we would all take precautions and use the mask, I think that we can get a better handle of what this virus is doing throughout our country. And I really kind of am kind of mad that it got politicized. And where people think it's their constitutional right to do whatever they want to do, and that's all well and good. They want to do that, but my thing was is that when folks, I didn't want to hear the stories of folks who were vehemently against wearing a mask, and then you put them on national TV talking about, you know, I didn't take this seriously. Here I'm in the hospital. You chose to do that. I think I talked to you guys in private about this, to where, if you choose not to wear a mask and you get sick, then you should sign a waiver to excuse yourself from any kind of medical, you know, hospital kind of, you know, attention, things of that sort, because you chose to be not only a harm to yourself, but to other people in the public. So I've lost a few friends with this. I know I have students who've lost parents and friends and relatives to this. I've lost maybe a couple of family members to this, and some good friends that I'll never see again and never be able to pay my respects at a funeral. So I do take it seriously. So maybe where it's hit the hardest, we see it a little bit more often. And hopefully we can get to a point where we can live more of a normal life than we did before this. But I just see a lot of people who are living reckless, and I don't see that coming anytime soon because folks aren't taking this seriously enough or taking the precautions to try to eradicate this particular virus.
Mr. Charles, your reaction, sir?
Yeah, I have to say that I do take it seriously, one, because of a person who's at probably susceptible to this virus when it first came out, myself, because I have asthma and allergies, and just my whole breathing process can be affected very quickly. And somebody that has dealt with viruses, that have led to bronchitis and things like that. So I do take it seriously. I do mask up. I've done the glove thing. The biggest thing, though, that I have to say that has really blown me away is the fact is that the people that really are, as you mentioned earlier, that the elderly people or people that are more immune, they might be susceptible to this virus when it first came out. I don't think there was enough quality information shared. And I think that was a major problem. I think that was a reason why these numbers went up, why more people die. Because you don't provide any information, and then you don't let people that may be susceptible to it get tested. It took forever for people to get tested. You had to have these certain right characteristics or these certain parameters to get tested. And while people had no idea what the hell was going on with them or how they were being sick or how they were being affected, they died. They died. And now we look back at it and just, oh, well, they were casualties like in the army. You expect a certain amount of people to die. And that's really sad. So I think now everybody's tuned in for the most part because you're seeing the numbers and you're seeing people die. And last but not least, you see that it has no, it does not discriminate. I always think about one of your favorite basketball players, Mark Karl-Anthony Towns, has all the money in the world. If both of his parents were infected with this virus, his mom died. All the money in the world cannot save you because you didn't have the right information or she wasn't able to use, you received the right proper care, whatever it may be. And that's sad, but that's real.
Let me jump in back on this for a second because I want to kind of piggyback on what you're saying there. Here's what I saw, and I didn't see this really covered well, but when an elderly person, I've known people that have elderly that had, a couple of people had this, and I've seen this with some nursing homes. I know nurses that work in nursing homes. If you were an elderly person and you weren't feeling well and you went to the hospital and they determined that you had corona, they sent you to a nursing home. A nursing home is not established and made to treat the coronavirus. They got you out of the hospital. It's like they sent you to the home to die. And a lot of the elderly in this country died in nursing homes. What does that say to you? Realistically, they gave up on these folks, people. They gave up on them. So, you know, and I've said this before, and I meant this as a while ago, I didn't say this. Anybody run around calling these doctors and nurses heroes, you're a hero. When you send an 80-year-old person to a nursing home to die, that makes you a fucking hero? I'm being honest. You come down with the virus, they send you home. What are the hospitals for? If you're sick and you can't be there, just tell me that. I just want to know, what are they for? Because a lot of people that came in that tested positive, they sent you to other places. Take this and do that. Some they kept in. But that's what, to me, boggles the mind. It just does. A lot of them died in nursing homes because the hospitals didn't want to treat them anymore. They were overstaffed with them. No, they didn't want to treat them. They just didn't. And you have a country that basically a lot of times the insurance company is only going to pay for a certain amount of days to be in the hospital. So what do they start looking at? Well, the insurance may not pay for this, and then they got them out of there. So miss me with that hero bullshit. Because if you went to school to treat folks and you wanted to really care, you find a way to get it done. And on that note, you probably know what I'm getting ready to say now, Mr. DeMaurice. Yale New Haven Hospital. In New Haven. When I tell you, DeMaurice, if you came back to New Haven now, you would see all the places that have built up new units of this, that, a lot of different things. You know, they sent me a letter the other day asking for a donation.
Ooh.
I'll say that again. Yes. They sent me a letter, and it came in, I think it came in early part of this week. They asking for donations. Here's a hospital and a university in this town. They don't even pay taxes. So I say again, and I'm not trying to knock the coronavirus. I'm just telling you what I've noticed that no one's talking about. No one's talking about. You don't send people away if you're trying to treat them. You don't. You just don't do it, in my opinion. You treat them. You make them better. Then you send them home. That's like a pregnant woman comes to the hospital to have a baby. Before the baby comes out, you send her somewhere else to have it. Because if you can't get treated in the hospital, we can get treated there. But that's what's been going on, folks. But you're not going to find that anywhere else. It's not. But I just seen that. I know a guy in my job said to me, his father went to the hospital. They told me I had coronavirus. He was out of the hospital one day at the home. Died in the home a few days later. A couple before, the man was driving his own car, 90 years old, driving around doing his thing. Okay. All right. There it is. Gentlemen, we're winding down to the last 12 minutes of this show. We're going to do things just a little different. As you know, if you don't know now, this show should be 2 hours long. We're taking it down to 90 minutes. We're doing a little testing things and doing some things a little different than we normally do. And so far, I like where we're doing it. We're going to tinker with just a little bit more and kind of tighten things up. But the one thing we usually do, and we're going to do this evening, we're going to go to sports and kind of set things up for tomorrow. For the most part, I don't want to say too much because you two are kind of going a little bit more, but let's do a little quick perspective of the weekend of sports that you kind of maybe had an idea to partake in the past day or two, Mr. DeMaurice.
I actually was a little excited about NFL football and the picks, and I just saw something that was really funny with the Cincinnati game because one of us picked Cincinnati to win, and they had a chance to tie the game. And the kicker kicked the ball, and it was wide right. And he immediately, I don't know why more kickers don't do this. He immediately grabbed the leg he kicked the ball with. Like he was hurt. I had to go on mute because I was laughing so hard. I don't know if anybody else saw that. But he grabbed the leg. He was limping off the field, I guess trying to get some sympathy of missing a chip shot. And Joe Burrow, you can just see his face like, okay, this is life in the NFL, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I will say this, man. I've been surprised with the level of play of teams the way they were playing this weekend, man, because I would have thought it's going to be shaky play. And for the most part, preseason ain't hurt the level of play at all. It's going to be hard to go back to preseason, man, because a lot of these teams played with a lot of less rust than I thought they was going to have. And that's something I noticed, and I was like, wow. I mean, a lot of these teams are ready to play. And there's a few kickers that missed some bad kicks today, man. I noticed across they missed some bad kicks. But there's certain teams, man. I was saying to my son earlier, and I know it's week one, and it's hard. You don't want to make a mass decision on week one. But I'm going to say this. I'm going to give it to you, Mr. Charles. I am sick and tired, and I picked them. I did pick them. But I'm sick and tired of the Vikings acting like they have a good defense. When you let Aaron Rodgers score twice in 90 seconds, you don't have a defense, bro. You don't have a defense. And this head coach you have supposed to be a defense connoisseur or whatever. I'm done with this. I don't want to get to the offense of the Vikings, but I'm done. Because there's no way they keep coming to your house and keep spanking you this way. At some point, you got to stand up to them. That was bullying. And you go look at that score and think that game was not close at all. At all. Whenever they wanted to, they just came there. There were some passes. Their receivers dropped wide open. It was one pass. A guy came across. I mean, it was no biking them for 10 yards. How did that happen? How? No, and that ain't got nothing to do with preseason. Nothing. If you see a different uniform running, you may want to follow him. I mean, I don't care what play coach you call. You may want to follow if he's open. Maybe you want to go near him. Just get near him. So, Mr. Charles, what's going on, bro?
I'm going to say this. They didn't want the Bengals to win that damn game. That's all I know. I know Joe Burrow made some bonehead mistakes when he was young.
Oh, yeah.
But when the hell, when you get two men at the game, the wide receiver and the safety and the cornerback tussling, pushing off on one another, then the one guy pulls off like he didn't push. They were pushing up each other, and he throws a touchdown strike in the end zone to win the game, and you call pass interference on the offensive player? Come on, man. They did not want their young man to win that first damn game. Oh, my God. And I understand the kicker, but it should never come to yet. That game was over. Everybody knew it, but that's okay. We're going to move on. All I know is Detroit, really? Detroit,
oh,
really?
God.
They had that over.
Oh,
my God. Like Detroit. I looked at the score.
Oh.
What the hell? They had the game on, and you wonder why people's dogs on the line. Oh, man, I cannot believe that. And last but not least, as I get off of this, is two other things. That damn Russell Wilson special, bro. That's all I want to say.
Uh-huh.
And the last thing I want to say is the Los Angeles Clippers, you don't want to win. They have the better team. They don't play as if they want to win. And as much as I like to see them play the Lakers to move forward, if they don't want it, damn it, Denver will take it. I am so tired of such a lackadaisical attitude because they think they should win just because. If you want to win, if they want to play hard, they can win. If they don't, Denver is going to beat them. So we'll see what happens, how Doc Rivers works on this game 7. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, come on in this sympathy, Reese. I heard you make some noise about the Clippers. I want to speak about them. I want to hear them first, man. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, the Clippers and they're not as good on defense as we thought they were. But the thing with Houston, Mike D'Antoni said he's not returning. Bruh, they're probably locking the door up because you made no adjustments in that series. None at all. Didn't run any plays. Houston doesn't run any plays. And why they thought this small ball was going to work is beyond me. And we're going to talk about that this week. But, yeah, man, Detroit, number 32, I don't even know who you are. Drop that ball in the end zone. You could have had a win. Give him his bus ticket right now because that you get paid to make plays at the end of the game like that to secure wins. There was no way the Lions should have lost that game against the Bears. Now we got to hear Trubisky in practice all damn week.
Chicago, man. I'm going to pick Chicago. I thought Detroit had that game too, but I really did. I was like, I'm not going to pay attention to score anymore. But I'm going to go to the Clippers because, you know, Mr. Charles said what I've been feeling with the Clippers all along. But they think they could just show up, man. They really believe they could just show up, and I don't know what it is. And it does surprise me because when you go back to beginning of the before the playoffs started. When you got a cat at the strip club that shouldn't be there, you got other cats just popping in. It just says that they're not there, and then you have a cat that basically can't score for three games, and tells you literally says this. I had a tough time adjusting to the bubble, huh? Okay, you did this last year. There was no bubble in OKC. There was no bubble. You did this several years ago in Indiana. There was no bubble. It's like, what the hell is going on? And I remember watching, I think it was a couple of games they played ago. It was the first quarter, and Denver ran a lead up like 20 points. And I'm looking at Doc Rivers like, at any point now, are you going to call the timeout? At any point. He's just sitting there looking. I'm like, I'm saying to myself, Doc, at what point? And then you go back to the series they played Dallas. They refuse to double team anyone. I'm like, I would love to see them take the Lakers down. I just don't think they will. Even if they get there, I don't think they will. And I'll be honest, man. I do not want to see LeBron win another championship. Because in some people's minds right now, if he wins another one, it's like he won eight. It's like he won eight. And that's not the truth. And they're going to put him in a status that he doesn't belong in. Now, is he a good player? A great player, yes. Has he done some things that's been phenomenal? Yes. But he's not where they want to put him if he wins this championship. And that's not just him. That's just being reality. In my opinion, speaking reality. But I don't understand it with them. I just don't get it, man. It's like they don't get it together. They don't want to play. And I just don't understand. But hopefully game 7 they do something. But And they're going to bring that same lackadaisical approach to the Lakers, and it's not going to work. But at the same time, man, the Celtics and the Heat are playing basketball. And the Greek Freak, I'm sorry, bro. I just can't. I just can't with you, man. I don't know what's going on, but you in this off season, there's some things you got to do. What you should be doing right now is calling a lounge. Go stay in this house and spend every single day with him and learn yourself a low post game. Because
can I say something real quick about him?
Absolutely, please. Yes, yes.
On social media, one of the guys I follow put out a statement that he has deleted all the folks from the Milwaukee Bucks from his particular platform page. So that may be an indication that he might be out of there.
Where would he go, though? I mean, in my opinion, where is he going to go to make a difference?
Pull a KD. Go to Golden State. Pull a KD.
Wow.
Sign of the time.
Wow.
They don't want him. They don't want him.
Okay. We'll
see. I don't.
Can he learn how to play with other people? He can't run point guard and go to State like he do in Milwaukee.
Yeah. He doesn't have a game, bro. He's going to win MVP, but he doesn't. When you really look at his game, he has no game. And like Mr. Charles said, you're not going to be able to throw the ball down the court. You're not going to be taking 3 points in Golden State uniform. What are you going to do? The league has realized they can basically finish you out going to the rim. You have nothing to offer. You clanking shots off on the free throw line. You can't have me in the fourth quarter. What is he going to give you? And the team, I don't know if it's Golden State, but the team they're giving, and Max, it's crazy.
Can I throw one thing in there real quick?
Absolutely. Yes, please.
If he's nice, maybe he can beg Jimmy Butler to take you.
Oh, man. I'm going to tell you, man. He's got them playing. Jimmy Butler's got the Heat playing, man. That's going to be a nice
series.
Yeah,
I got to
admit,
he's stepping up. He's stepping up for the Heat. He got them a fire under them, I have to admit.
Yeah, they're playing, man. You know, he couldn't do that in Minnesota with your boy Towns. You know, he couldn't do that with there, but, you know, in Miami.
Big.
Gentlemen, thanks for showing up the way you two always do and bringing it strong like you always do. We'll get together and do it again soon. Enjoy the Cowboys game if you can, because it seems like the Rams are already starting to dominate. You didn't hear that from me, though.
Wow.
Adore the key.